Welcome to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hemmerker. In each episode, she'll talk with your favorite romantic suspense authors. They will take you behind the scenes of the writing process, giving excerpts from their writing, and share stories about their writing life.
Point of Danger by Irene Hannon. As a radio talk show host, Eve Reilly is used to backlash from her controversial on-air commentary and interviews. But when a threatening package arrives on her doorstep, it appears that one disgruntled listener is resorting to more than angry words to silence her voice. Eve turns to police detective Brent Lang for help as the harassment intensifies and grows more dangerous. Although Brent can't find any evidence to link the string of unsettling incidents, he's convinced they're connected. But unless he can track down her foe quickly, the gutsy woman who is swiftly winning his heart may not survive. In this Alfred Hitchcock-style thriller, Point of Danger will have readers on the edge of their seats and turning pages long into the night as a determined enemy moves in for the kill.
Hi, and welcome to this episode of The Romantic Side of Suspense. I'm your host, Sarah Hemmerker, and I'm so glad you joined me. Today I'm chatting with Irene Hannon. She's a best-selling and award-winning author of more than 50 contemporary romance and romantic suspense novels, and I have a feeling that you're going to enjoy this interview. So welcome to my show, Irene.
Thanks so much, Sarah. I'm happy to be here.
Now, romance and romantic suspense novels, they have a similar, obviously similar thread with romance. So why do you like writing in those two different genres?
You know, I think it's because of the variety it gives me. There is obviously a similarity. They both have the romantic element. But there are a lot of differences, too. The contemporary romance that I write, they have a lot of drama in them, but it's more of an interpersonal variety, and there's very rarely any sort of cliffhanging life and death, shooting and all that sort of thing. I get to do a pretty deep dive, though, psychologically into the characters and focus on the relationship side of things. And right now I'm writing a series called Hope Harbor, set on the Oregon coast, that has allowed me to create this charming town with these some recurring characters and a new story every time. So I just really enjoy that. When I move into romantic suspense, and I alternate the books, is how I usually do it, when I move into romantic suspense, I'm dealing with more, usually a shorter time frame and a lot more tension and danger and some characters that are pretty sometimes scary, because I take readers into the heads of all of my characters, not just the hero and heroine, but including a lot of the bad people, which can be a pretty scary place. And so those books tend to be a lot more intense when I'm writing them and very research heavy. So by the time I finish a romantic suspense book, I'm pretty ready to visit my little town in Oregon, Hope Harbor, and deal with more what I'll call normal people and
right.
normal problems. So it's just a nice break for me between the two. It gives me a little bit of a break from that intensity of suspense. Mm-hmm. And then by the time I'm finished with a Hope Harbor book, I'm ready to go back to suspense. So it's worked really well for me.
So have you always wanted to be a writer? I'm always fascinated with how people have come to writing. What made you start writing books?
You know, I get the question pretty often when I do interviews and even speaking engagements of, like, when did you decide to become a writer? And I always kind of chuckle to myself when I get that, because I didn't really decide to become a writer. I've always pretty much believed that people are born writers. It's kind of like any talent, any specialized talent. I think I always think of my husband, who's a wonderful artist, and he can look at a scene or a person, and in a few strokes of the pen, capture that. Well, that's an amazing talent. I could take art lessons till I was 100, and every person I draw would look like a stick figure. I mean, that's
yes.
I do not see with the eyes of an artist. It is not within my realm of possibility, no matter how much training I had. And I kind of think that writing is like that, too, along with other talents. But it's not that you can't hone a talent and become mm-hmm. much better and improve it and polish it. But I think it's always there if it's what I'll call a true talent. It's a gift. You know, it's a gift. So mm-hmm. I think I've always had that, and I always tell people that I made my debut as a fiction writer when I was 10. I was one of the winners in a Complete the Story contest from a National Children's Magazine. So I've been writing, honestly, as long as I can remember. But when it came time to think about career, you know, I kind of looked at the writing and I thought, yeah, I don't really want to, like, be a starving artist. And it's a tough...
Who does, Irene?
Yeah, it's a tough, you know, it's a tough field to make a real living in. So I thought, I don't really want to do that, so what am I going to do? So I ended up getting a master's degree in journalism, and I went to work right out of school for a corporation, and I worked in the corporate communications department where I wrote every day, not fiction. But once I was there and I had a steady income and I had benefits and I said, okay, I know where my next meal is coming from. I can pay the rent. Then I started to delve into the fiction writing and the novels, and that's when I started to do it on the side. And I did that for a long, long time before I finally got to the point where I said, okay, my job is getting too busy, and I kept rising in the ranks in my job, and then it got to the point where I had no time to write. So I was at this crossroads of, what do? Do I give up the writing, or do I give up the job with all the great benefits? And
right.
It was a tough choice, and I had to really, really pray about that and think about that and ask for guidance, and ultimately made the choice to leave the corporate world and become a full-time novelist. And so that is what I do now, and that really was the decision that took me out of just the standard write the book kind of job to launching into bestseller status. And it was just a quantum leap in my career as a writer. So I never looked back. It was a great move for me, but it wasn't made lightly or without a lot of thought and planning, because it's tough to make a go in any artistic endeavor, I think, including writing.
Yeah, I agree, you know, entirely. And as someone who's still doing freelance writing while I write novels, you know, I get that. And it is, and not to be, like, discouraging to new writers, but, I mean, you really do have to put in that time.
Yes.
I mean, you have to carve out that, your fiction writing time from your other duties. I think that, along with, I love what you said about, you know, kind of having that innate talent, or, you know, just really that desire to write. Like an artist, if they don't create, you know, sculptures or painting, whatever their medium is, they feel like a part of them is, like, missing. I feel that way about writing, you know.
Absolutely. It's this drive or this desire or this passion that's in you, and, you know, you just have to do it. I don't know how else to explain that. It's just something you feel you have to do. But, yeah, it's I think most writers, most people who write novels and write fiction, most of them have a day job, like I did for a lot of years. And I don't think that that's a bad thing, because even these days, I sometimes, you know, you just always wonder, well, is this going to continue? will my
yes.
artist reverse? Because it's kind of like an actor or actress, you're only kind of as good as your last movie. And if it's a bomb or it tanks, your career can really take a nosedive. And that's true with writing, too. So there really is no guarantee in this business at all. Even though you reach a point where you think you're pretty secure, it's never 100%.
No. And I think that is, you know, a lesson to us all, no matter where we are in our writing journey, that we should always be striving to, you know, build on our writing. You know, our next book should always be better than our previous book. I mean, we should have that evolution. Just like artists, you look at their early stuff and you look at their late stuff, you're like, you can see, I think, maybe a little bit more starkly. But it takes dedication, you know, to write.
It
and
does.
I think that's...
And, you know, you're absolutely right. I think that desire to continue to improve is so important, because I always feel like, even after this is my 59th book that's coming out, and I still feel like with every book I learn something new and I get better. And it was brought home to me very starkly in the last couple of years, because a few of my earlier titles, the rights are coming back to me, and I'm now in this age of self-publishing. There are many opportunities to get those back out. So I thought, great, now I can find a whole new audience for these books. And so I started to look at them. I haven't looked at them in years. And I'm reading them, And I'm cringing. And I'm thinking, oh, my goodness, I don't write anything like this anymore. Can somebody actually buy this book? And so I thought, I cannot possibly put these books back out in this condition because my current readers, they expect more than that. They're not used to that early stage. So what I've done is as I begin to put these out, I am going back and not rewriting because I still love the stories, but the technical parts of the writing need so much massaging. And so it's taking me way longer than I expected to begin to put these back out. But when I am, I think I have 6 or 8 out that are back in recirculation now. I know that the people who are reading me currently, if they pick one up, they will not be disappointed. And that's the last thing I want to do is disappoint any reader. So I'm being really careful, but it just was astonishing to me and eye-opening how much I had changed with my writing over the years.
Yeah, because I guess people don't always think of it, the non-writers or just the readers who we love you readers. You know, it is an evolution, and yes, and I'm in the midst of self-publishing a book that I wrote several years ago, and even just after a couple of years, I'm like, oh my goodness, what was I thinking? And some things, I mean, I still love the story, and so...
Yes.
You know, but I think it's important to do that because, I mean, we've all picked up books of authors that we love and like maybe an earlier one and you read it and you're disappointed because they didn't take that time to kind of bring it up to where they are now. To do that. So we're almost out of time. I think we have time for one more question answer here. So what do you think is the hardest part of writing romantic suspense? I ask this question almost for all my interviews because I just find it fascinating. We all have different parts we think is hard. So for you, what do you think is the hardest part?
For me, it really with any book, but particularly for some reason with romantic suspense, the hardest part for me is the upfront part before I ever put my fingers on the keyboard. And that's just developing the story idea and getting to know the characters. And figuring out how everything is going to fit together. I'm not an outliner, so I don't do that. I'm not a plotter, but I do have to have a really good sense of who my main characters are and what the basic plot is and what's going to make this unique and really different and compelling for the reader. And especially since I mostly write series, it's what's going to link the books? Not that my storylines never carry over from book to book, but there is a linking element. So I have to figure that out. And just doing all of that upfront part is really hard for me. It's like pulling my fingernails out one by one, honestly. It's a really painful process. I hate that part of the process. My husband hates that part of the process. When I come to bed, he's like, oh, no, we're in that phase again. and honestly, I really hate that part of it, but that is just super hard for me. I'm not one of these people that says, I have a million story ideas and I just don't know what to write next. I start from scratch with every book, like, oh, I have nothing. Where do I go from here?
Yeah.
So that is a really hard part of the process for me. Once I get rolling, you know, it's pretty good once I get rolling, but getting that started in that early initial planning phase is tough.
You know, I feel better, Irene, just having you say that. Having written so many books, and I'm at the beginning of my, you know, book writing career here, and I feel better because I was just thinking, Irene, she must just, like, crank them out, no problem. So it's nice to know that, you know, even established writers sometimes have trouble with those simple, not simple, but with some part of the writing process. So, thank you.
Well, and the other part is, and this isn't meant to discourage any writer out there, but everybody thinks that if you've written a lot of books, surely it gets easier with everyone. And I find just the opposite for two reasons. First of all, I keep raising my standards with every book.
Mm-hmm.
I want every book to be better. And the other thing is, after you've written, in my case, 59 books now, I have used up a lot of plot ideas.
Yeah.
So I have to really, really be creative with every book to find that I, you know, it's something new and different for people who have been reading me through the years, because I'll be thinking of an idea and I'll think, oh, here's a good one. And it's like, wait, no, I did that already. So, I mean, it happens a lot. It happens a lot. So it actually gets harder for me with every book.
Yeah, you know, because you do want to have, like we talked earlier, you know, about with that freshness to it.
Yes.
You know, I mean, we all know there's only, what, 7 real plot lines in the whole
right.
universe. You know, so, yeah, we have that. But the readers don't want to read the exact same. We have to make them different. And that
yes.
that can be challenging. And
it's a challenge. It absolutely is a challenge because you never want a reader to say, oh, you know, it's such and such's book, same old, same old. I mean, you don't want
right.
that ever to happen. And so you have to work harder and harder with every book to make sure it doesn't because it's very easy to start repeating yourself.
Yeah, well... And unfortunately, that we are at the end of our time. So thank you so much for being my guest today, Irene.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. It's been fun chatting with you.
You've been listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense. I'm your host, Sarah Hammerker, and I've been talking with Irene Hannon. She's a best-selling and award-winning author of more than 50 contemporary romance and romantic suspense novels. And stay tuned right after this interview for an excerpt from her new book, Point of Danger.
Now an excerpt from Point of Danger by Irene Hannon. The package was ticking. Eve Riley froze, sucked in a breath, and gaped at the FedEx box propped beside her front door. Tick, 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 tick. The sound was faint, but distinctive. And what was that? Was that a wire sticking out through the tape? She squinted. Yeah, it was. Heart stuttering, she eased the door closed, snatched up the cell she'd dropped on the hall table, and jabbed in 911 as she bolted toward the back of the house. The box definitely didn't contain anything as prosaic as the new water filters she'd ordered for her fridge. 911, what's the nature of your emergency? There's a package on my front porch that's... ticking, and a wire's hanging out of it. Eve dug through the drawer next to the kitchen sink until her shaky fingers closed over the back door key for her neighbor's house. I'm dispatching as we speak. The woman's voice was calm, like she dealt with bombs every day. I want you to vacate the premises and find cover a safe distance away until officers arrive. Got it. She pulled open the back door and clattered down the steps while she answered the woman's questions, trying to wrap her mind around this surreal turn of events. Hate mail was one thing, an occupational hazard you learned to live with in her type of job. But a bomb? Way out of bounds. She skipped the last step and leapt to the ground. Maybe her sisters were right. Maybe hosting a controversial talk radio show was a dangerous job. And maybe, in the future, she wouldn't cavalierly dismiss the venom that was sometimes spewed at her by listeners who didn't agree with her opinions. For now, though, she had to focus on keeping her neighbors safe. Willing as she was to put herself in the line of fire as part of her job, it wasn't fair to endanger the innocent residents of this bucolic St. Louis suburb she called home. The 911 operator finished her questions as Eve sprinted next door. I'll stay on the line until officers arrive. Are you moving to a safe location? Uh-huh. Or she would be soon, after detouring to Olivia Macy's. The 81-year-old widow would either be watching TV with the volume sky high or napping without her hearing aid. She wouldn't hear her phone. And she might not even notice the noise from the emergency vehicles that would soon descend on the quiet cul-de-sac. After bounding up the steps to the woman's back porch, she skidded to a stop, set the phone beside the pot of geraniums on the patio table, and pounded on the door. Come on, Olivia, open up, please! As she squeezed her other neighbor's key, the first faint wail of a siren keened through the muggy August air. She continued to pummel the door until the spry, white-haired woman at last pulled it open.
Gracious, Eve!
Olivia adjusted her glasses and blinked.
I thought I was being raided.
Sorry, you need to go down into the basement ASAP.
She gave the woman a choppy 3-sentence explanation.
Until the police get here and tell us what to do, that's the most secure place.
There's a bomb on your front porch?
Her neighbor stared at her as if she'd just said aliens had landed in the yard.
I don't know for sure, but it's ticking and I'm not taking any chances. Can you get downstairs by yourself while I stash Ernie in the basement?
Her neighbors to the north would be devastated if anything happened to the coddled Bichon Frise they left in her charge while they attended a wedding in Chicago.
Of course, but you should take cover too.
I will. She tossed the promise over her shoulder as she hurtled down the steps and dashed across her backyard to her other neighbor's house, the wail of the sirens louder now.
Please, don't let that package blow up while I'm out here, Lord.
With that desperate plea looping through her mind, she zoomed to her neighbor's back porch, breaking every personal speed record. Once she slipped through the door, Ernie pranced around her feet with a happy yip, then charged toward his food dish and gave her a hopeful look.
Sorry, buddy.
She snagged his leash off a hook and swept him up.
You can chow down later. In the meantime, you and I are going to the basement.
The white fluffball began to squirm in her arms as if he'd been attacked by a band of marauding fleas.
Chill, Ernie. We won't be down there for...
Bam, bam, bam!
She jerked, hand flying to her chest as the pounding on the back door reverberated through the quiet house. Tuning out Ernie's plaintive howls, she hightailed it to the back door. A police officer in a tactical vest and helmet with the visor down was visible through the window. He spoke the instant she pulled the door open.
Ma'am, you need to leave the house. We have a possible bomb next door.
Without giving her a chance to respond, he hustled her across the yard. At the end of the cul-de-sac, he handed her off to a county officer inside the yellow police tape that cordoned off the neighborhood. The uniformed woman introduced herself, but the name didn't penetrate the fog that had begun to swirl through Eve's brain. Weird how she could pontificate for 6 hours a week to a quarter of a million listeners around the country about the violence, vulgarity, and vice-besetting society, yet when serious nastiness hit close to home, her stomach morphed into a blender. But she was not going to succumb to pressure, or threats, or intimidation. Whatever the motivation for today's incident, she was sticking with her principles. She would not back down from her point of view, no matter the danger. Tomorrow would be business as usual. In the meantime, though, she needed to rein in her galloping pulse, get her shakes under control, and try not to lose her lunch.
Thanks for listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hammerker. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. You can sign up to receive notifications of upcoming podcasts and listen to previous editions at sarahhammerkerfiction.com.